We are going to be talking today about House of Cards, Season 4, Episode 8, and Episode 9. So those are Chapters 47 and 48, and I have to always look back at the doc because it gets so confusing. but these two episodes of Roberto, I thought they actually tied in together pretty well. Because everybody is really sort of playing each other. Everybody is... you know, building their house of cards, if you will.
Well, I mean, that's always politics. It's what's interesting about this one that I really liked, actually, is that it shows that, and this is something that, you know, you talk about real politics, it can kind of come into play, but definitely within, when it comes to, hold on a second, let me try something really quick.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to do that.
That's okay.
When it comes to the show, one thing I like about it is that it shows that kind of both sides sort of play dirty, for lack of better words. I mean, we always know that Frank's kind of, doesn't play by the same rule book as everybody else.
Well, the only one who can really, if the other opposing party, and, you know, of course, in the United States, we are generally just two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. And so if the Republicans are really going to challenge somebody who has the sort of no moral, ethical spine or what you ever want to call it. He's got to be somebody who compares to him. There's no way a nice guy is going to win against Frank.
No, but it was really interesting, especially when you start seeing in this episode a lot of the Conway kind of solo scenes where... It shows him that he's about like he'll throw out words that like, oh yeah, that sounds like what Frank would say to his wife and team and everything else. Because again, Conway is always, at least at the beginning, is pitched as this sort of beginning. It's sort of like this, the antithesis of Frank. You know, he's got a family. He's healthy and virile and all this stuff like that. He doesn't have a replaced, you know, a donor liver. But what's great about him. And what I liked about this episode, especially when it became the, you know, the meeting of the two minds, if you will, when they went into the room, that might have been my favorite scene.
Yeah, so that would
this
be,
entire episode.
Oh, absolutely. That was episode 9. And, you know, and actually, I always try to check ahead to the next episode again before we plan out our shows to see where they match up. And I love that scene so much.
Well, because the greatest part of that scene...
This definitely ties together. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I think that episode, right when Conway pulls the fast one on Frank, that really everything kind of comes together right.
Well, because even when he's walking to the thing, he's like, "What are you going to do?" It's like, "Frank called my bluff. What can I do? There's nothing else left." And not only that, but I love the moment of Frank says, "Well, you know, we could talk about, you know, it's just like we could talk about real things, or we could just, you know, kind of chill here." As like, you played Scammer Gario yet?
That great?
Which is
really
a great mobile game, and you know, was another kind of indie thing that was kind of, you know, caught the web by storm. It's like, you played Gario yet? No, what's that about?
By the way, I meant to look that up beforehand, but I knew you would know.
Agar.io.
So it's a legit thing.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. No, totally,
I figured
legit
it
game.
Had to be.
Got a lot of it started off as, I think, as a web browser game, and then became a mobile game, and it is what it is. You basically are this little dot, you know, kind of assuming basically the idea being like you're a single celled organism trying to grow bigger, bigger, bigger. It becomes, what's so funny is that you start seeing
kind of like
Katamari Damacy.
Yes. Oh,
sort of.
I mean,
the coolest
that
part about
game.
Gario is that since you are playing with everybody in the world or everyone that's on there at that time, can like, if you're a small thing, you start seeing like these towering giants of like giant cells that have like this username on there where it's like, you know, whatever offensive or not offensive thing they want to write as their username. Yeah. As it's sort of coming into you, eating the rest of the cells, and here you are, the small thing. Mm-hmm. And as you get bigger and bigger and bigger, it everything sizes accordingly. So you start seeing like these newbie cells as you're just like this towering behemoth circling. And then when you see someone way bigger than you, you're just like, oh crap, I gotta go, gotta move. And you can like split yourself. It's a fun game, but it's
definitely
it's so funny.
Game that anybody running for the president of the United States would be into, absorbing everything around you and becoming.
But
bigger.
Like, there's a line. I wish, like, there are times where I wish this show wasn't family friendly, because there's a line. There's a line that Conway says that, and if you watch the episode, you know, I don't know if I can. There's no way to paraphrase that line. Okay, it's an amazing line, and it's you know, like basically Frank takes his bite of the sandwich. The turkey is like, this tastes like rubber. And then I was just like, what I loved about that moment was that it really, really boiled down what politics is truly all about.
So it was basically, you know, his response was, well, you know, the rubber taste of the sandwich, he was saying, basically like, well, that's kind of the taste I'm talking about when I kowtow to the Democrats, or, you know.
Yeah, but it was the way he said it.
You can't
and
say
I think
that
what was important was what was important about that scene, and I think what was interesting was that when it all boiled down to it, when you kind of reduce it to the everything it is, it really doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of this is theatrics. It was so funny because everyone called everyone's bluff, and they know, like, it was such a fun moment because you got to see sort of both of them sort of drop their facades for a bit among the two of them, and sort of really kind of explain that none of this matters in the grand scheme of them. And it's not like us versus them. It's more of a, who cares? You know, this is the theatrics of the game. I want the job. You have the job. We're both competing for the job, but who cares? Because at the end, only one of us can win anyways. So, you know, this is our moment of reflection, our moment to kind of get away from that. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was great. And then also it was great to see them, how I put in our show notes, that, you know, we're the same guy. We're basically, these are two of the same people, and they really, if they were on the same side of the party, if they're the same party or the same ticket, ouch, you know, they would be, and I think they kind of realized that they are, you know, Frank definitely realized that and saw that Conway pulled a Frank move, which was going to the bathroom to take a call from Kathy and setting it up so that Kathy would now start getting the Democratic convention to start. The buzz now is people want to nominate Kathy as president. And, I mean, so actually that was Kathy's move more than it was Conway's. But Conway just sat back and just was enjoying watching Frank discover this while they were watching the returns, and but that was definitely a Frank kind of move, and so it's interesting that how they've done that, because you know now that Conway is going to be a big threat to Frank. Conway has the charisma. He's got the family. He's got the internet. He's got everything. And not only that, he can play those same kind of games that Frank can.
Well, because like that made me wonder, especially that scene when at the end of it, you know, there's a moment where they're talking about Louisiana is saying to get Kathy Durant voted for president. Like, part of me wonders if Conway didn't have some sort of something to have that happen.
Hmm.
Just because the nature of that, he went to the bathroom, made a very, you know, private call that literally our you know, Frank was like tapping that call. It's like, you know, I wouldn't recommend that, you know, that kind of thing. I'm wondering if
it was great to see Frank squirm like that.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's something going on there, because there's something going on with that announcement. I mean, obviously we know where team, you know, team Underwoods are on, and how they're manipulating the system to kind of work it to, which I loved. The one thing I loved, especially about episode 8, was just the fact that we went back really hard to breaking the fourth wall in so many appropriate ways, like. Like, one of my favorite moments, again, was at the very beginning of the episode where he's recounting all the reasons why he likes, you know, why they want Austin to be the VP. and he counts them down like five reasons, and then you know slowly but surely reveals the rest of them.
Actually, he counts them down.
It was such a great visual gag that I was like, I was so happy that this episode had, you know, a lot more than past episodes have had of the breaking the fourth wall and him addressing the audience, because I really missed those moments because you get to see kind of Frank become, you know, again, dropping the facade. Anytime he drops a facade, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So actually, kind of going back, we are now sort of reintroduced again, as they do, to a character that we've seen before, and that is Tom Yates.
Yes.
He is the author, or was going to be, or is, as we know, as we finish up these two episodes, he's still going to be their author. He's back on board. But Tom is also playing both sides by giving both parties, you know, the Conways and the Underwoods, a copy, a selected copy of his book. And so they both have the same information. And but it I don't know. It seems to me that Yates always intended to come back, is if they would have him back.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing, is that I almost felt that wasn't playing both sides, because there's a moment in that episode, that beginning part of the episode, where he's like, you know, where they're talking about not really, because ultimately it was very apparent that Conway, you know, in later scenes could care less about the book. You know, he doesn't care what the book is about, whether his wife thinks he's a good author or not, he could care less. It's all for him. Just does it damage the Underwoods? Cool. Because again, you're playing a dirty kind of, if you're playing against an opponent like Frank Underwood, you kind of got to take what revenge you can. But what I liked about it was that it sort of, you know, put them in a situation, because yeah, I never felt that Tom wanted to play both sides. He just wanted to get the meeting. He wanted to get back, you know, and it's very apparent that, he left something there as a writer, that he was willing enough to write fiction about it just to get it out of his system. Because, you know, we learned about all the other books he's written have not really done so hot, but that's because his heart's never been into them. And this is the first time his heart's been into something.
The only one that was any good,
right?
Apparently.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is the first one that not only has his heart been in writing it, but that he's wanted to write and wanted to finish. That's why he did the fiction base. It was, you know, if he didn't want to do it, he wouldn't have done it. But him even saying, yeah, it's based on my time here, it's written in fiction, that's enough for me, for him, at least for me, as a interpreting him as a writer, it's like that he really, really, really wanted to do this.
Yeah. I think he did that well, and I think that they it was kind of surprising to see, you know, Frank and Claire, they can very quickly forgive if they think that you're an asset to them.
Yeah,
and it's kind of funny that they did this here, but I think the one thing that Tom has done wrong was the way he sort of talked to down to Stamper, telling him, here's your copy, you're the messenger, you don't need to know anymore, you've got my message, you know, and Stamper, you know, Stamper scares me. Stamper, you know, we've seen what Stamper can do, and so that kind of leads us into the other part of this, the Stamper issue is, you know, that moment when he's like sort of looking up the family of the next person in line with the liver, and you know, you see his face when, I guess the kid's name was Danny, I don't know how I caught that, but the kid who shot himself and donated all his organs, you could see on Stamper's face that he is really torn by his decision to take that liver away from someone else. And I'm thinking, oh no, here we go again with Stamper. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, it's again, I keep reiterating this, and I think maybe this is the overarching House of Cards theme, and maybe this is what makes the pathos and the drama and pushes the plots forward, is that people just have a hard time of letting things go and sitting well with their decisions. Because on one hand, you know, if Stamper's only world was Frank, he's like, I got to save Frank. Now that he's not necessarily being like it's interesting to see sort of his conscience catching up with him, because it's never been Stamper's MO. Like, that's never come up in anybody else. Like, it's not like his conscience caught up with him with Rachel. You know, this is the first time he's looked and been like, oh crap, these are where my actions have led me. And he's like literally at the point of like, do I donate to this? It was the minute it happened, I was like, oh crap, we're going to this again. just let it go. Just move on. I know it sucks, man, but just look, you made your decision. Deal with it. Don't, you know, it's just going to eat you. And then you have that, you know, combined with the, you know, standard stamper paranoia against Leanne and like, ooh, there's got to be something on her. There's got to be some dirt, find it, Seth. It's like, why am I doing this? You're supposed to be obedient, Seth. Do what I say. And trying to figure out how to be the only point of contact, because as time goes on, you know, things start to get pulled away. And Stamper, again, is a man that we've known very, very frequently has various addiction problems and gets addicted to many things beyond just substances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting about the Leanne thing. Oh, and we could go on because we have more cards to talk about here. Do you want to talk about our ad first?
Yeah, we got to first thank some people. We got to thank, of course, the people at 100TB.com. Sorry, you people in the UK, this does not apply to you. But if you are a US listener, however, it does apply to you. They actually offer entry-level servers from $139 a month, and they are actually a really cool provider. You know, when it comes to dedicated servers, you know, people always talk about, like, $139, that looks, you know, super expensive. But if you know the actual dedicated server market, if you need not just servers for, like, running a website or something like that, but something that's going to power, you know, maybe an infrastructure, maybe your entire, you know, giant database for some big giant internet project. Maybe you're trying to launch the next Twitter or something along those lines. You need a lot of power, and $139 a month is not bad at all. It's actually a really good price. So head over to 100TB.com. I'd like to thank them, of course, for sponsoring us here at the British Tech Network. And of course, if you want to help the British Tech Network directly, Jackie, where can they go? Because I know we have Patreon, but I always forget. I always need to have a link to go to the Patreon. Like,
It's very, very simple, okay. Roberto. Just go to patreon.com/the British Tech Network.
There you go.
Yep. It supports all of these great shows. And gosh, there are so many. And yeah, come on, give what you can.
Yep, totally, totally worth it. Mm. All right, let us move on to the Kathy versus Claire.
Oh, good one.
Fight.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny.
Or more importantly, I guess the better way we should put it is the Underwoods, I would rather call it the Underwoods completely and utterly, go around the back to get Claire Underwood nominated for VP.
And it's funny that it's not even just Kathy, because if we're talking about both episodes 8 and 9, we start in episode 8 with with Frank pretending to follow along with the Democratic Party leadership and their suggestion of Dean Austin of Ohio, who is a NRA, the National Rifle Association. It's a big gun lobby organization. And he's a Democrat. He's got all these great things, and as Roberto mentioned before. And so Frank never intends to keep him along.
No.
And they really kind of ruin his long 20-year connection with the NRA to play him about getting nominated for vice president. And then we move from that straight into manipulating Kathy. And then Kathy, I think, you know, she knows what's going on. And that was another nice little meeting, that lunch or that breakfast between Frank and Kathy, that Stamper set up for them, because they were trying to prepare Kathy for what would become obvious, that suddenly everyone is going to be at the convention. They're going to get the momentum of that convention to go towards nominating Claire.
Yeah, except for...
And you know she knows what's going on, but yet she...
The worst part of that, like I said, I do believe it's Conway that did it, was the whole Louisiana of like, we take our 61 votes to nominate Kathy for president. And it's like, what do you mean president? It's like, we believe that this... Like, it's so funny and it's so weird, because I know, I feel bad for Kathy as a character, because she began her sort of her beginnings as sort of being part of Frank's team, and it just didn't pan out near the end. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for her because Kathy Durant's not a bad, like, out of all the politicians that are there, she's one of the better politicians. Mm-hmm. And she's always worked really well to kind of be part of the party. It just sucks that sometimes the party's not there for you. And I feel bad for her character just because it's like, I'm sorry. It sucks, but you're the person that's going to take the fall next. And it's all, cause again, it was such a hard thing to convince the American public at that in the story that Claire could be that. And if it wasn't, it was, again, it was so great about all the things of this is how well the Underwoods do things to manipulate stuff. And do it in subtle ways. It's like, oh no, leave the door open. It gets really stuffy in here. It's like, come on here, reporter. Oh, don't, you know, oh, the room's taken up. Sorry. And then move on to another room. Not even, you know, mention the fact who's in the room.
And Frank is really leaning into Austin as if they're pals. Yep. They're, you know, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And then you have, you know, you then have another reporter talk to, the current VP. What's his name? I always forget the guy's, the current vice president.
Oh, Blythe. Donald
Blythe. And Blythe is like,
of course,
you know, on the record. Right. Cause again, he already has been manipulated. He's already been played.
He's head know. Over heels for Claire.
Right. He's already played. He was already in the pocketbooks, but just leaving that little, like, on the record, off the record kind of thing. And then that becomes a story. And it's like, yeah, of course we knew he's going to do that. Like, you know, it's like we've been playing this right from day one. Mm-hmm. And it's so, you know, the one thing that the Underwoods do really well is that they know how to manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to be interesting is their overarching fight with Conway is that Conway is really good at manipulating Data. And I don't know how well it's going to work out for him. Because, even I think in episode 8, he got angry at the fact of just like, We put all this in money and time and investment into, you know, making sure the Data was gonna skew our way, and none of this works. And it was such a fun moment of that. And so I'm really curious because again, at the end of that episode, at the end there, Kathy's brought up as a potential viable presidential candidate, and that's gonna be something. You know, something's gonna come of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's gonna be interesting to see. Why don't we talk about? There's one other little story.
Yeah, we should talk about. We should talk about actually the bigger,
because behind all of these cards playing that seem to go, everything is just working out for Frank and Claire. Behind all of that, we get the story of Hammerschmidt, who was the former editor of the Washington Herald, or it's kind of like the Washington Post.
This is kind of what I was hinting at last week that we maybe should have talked more about with in general. Just we talked about, like, usually before the show.
Mentioned that, because one of the things that he lands on, and we'll go into that. So I'll bounce back to you in a moment, but. It's funny. The funny thing is I have my notes. Meacham, he's now more finally important to talk about than he ever was alive.
Yeah, well, because it's gonna be what's great about this beeline is that this beeline is way more fascinating, way more important, because this is the beeline. Though I know we're probably getting another season, and that's neither here nor there, but this is the beeline that could be the beginning of the end for everything.
Mm.
Because again, it's the idea of, like, has a president, you know, when he goes to the pizza joint, like, has a president been here? No. That guy, however, has, you know, the security guard to the president, you know, the one that is that
but
his all time
that his face happened to be on TV at that time, Meacham's face.
The guy that's been there, and it's just like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. Hold on a second, let's take that bit of data and mine that, and it's so crazy because he's been digging deeper and deeper into this whole thing. And I don't know, I honestly don't know what he'll learn, and I don't know what he'll know, and I don't know what he'll do with the data, you know, because it's going to be the problem with it. I mean, because, you know, everyone, you know, if anybody feels guilt, Hammerschmidt is one of them. And I'm very curious. He's like talking to, you know, his Zoe's father, and he's like got him, you know, calling him just like, you know, where's... When is you know, the idea of all this stuff, like, you know, if you find anything, you let me know. And it's like, I will, sir. And then he's, you know, dig it again. the biggest issue with this show and sort of the biggest recurring theme is that bad things tend to happen when you just don't let the past go. In at least in the world of House of Cards, things, you know, your past will catch up with you eventually, and that's we all hope for Frank as a character. But the reoccurring theme, the retronato, if you will, of House of Cards is that bad things happen if you just don't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what and Hammerschmidt, you know, was comfy letting it go, and now he's back and not letting it go, and I don't know what that means for his character.
Is he going to turn into Lucas? Is he going to?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's one of those things of like he's digging deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, because again, he's a journalist. He's going to do that.
Right.
It's the question of what does he do with that information? What is the conclusion he comes down to? And more importantly, does that bite him in the end, or does he just say, "I know this"?
Or is he going to be the guy who?
Yeah. Or is he be the guy that blows it all up? Or is he going to be the guy that says, "I know the information. I don't care anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that it would burn him in the end. And he just runs away because he's just like, "I'm glad I learned the truth. Cool. I don't care anymore." And he just lets it go. Because again, that's the only way you stay alive in the series is that you just have to let it go.
He does seem to be going a little, you know, and I think because we didn't talk about this last episode when we had Tom on, but he did meet with Janie. Janie, I believe her name was, the former White House correspondent for the Herald, and saw her condition and saw the state that she was in. She was taking Xanax. She doesn't sleep. She doesn't, you know, she just wants to get away from it. And I think that like, started him down the road of, well, and when she said, "I know this happened. I know it's true. I know that Lucas was right." I think he completely believed that. And you kind of see Hammerschmidt sort of bend it a little when he's meeting with this crazy woman in the street, and he says he's trying to get her to respond to these photos, and he calls himself Officer Tom, and that's a felony. You know, you don't impersonate an officer, even to a crazy person on the street, but he is doing what he can to get to. He feels like he's very close to something, so you know he's all in. And that seems a little bit like a Lucas type move.
But then, and my big fear, and this is the big fear for that character, and it always is, because again, I'm not saying that this won't be Frank's end. This could be the Underwoods' completely and utter demise for all I know at this point. But the reoccurring theme within the series, the overarching thing, the thing that caused the death of Zoe, the death of Russo, Lucas's ultimate demise as, you know, being shot and pulling a gun out and being completely desperate, and him even going to prison for the first time go around, is that these characters, for right or wrong reasons, you know, I'm not, you know, in terms of series, we could argue that, oh, that's a just reason, whatever, but because they do not leave the past and just let things go, it seems to end in their demise or something horribly worse. And because of that, if that wasn't a theme in this show and it wasn't happened every time so far, I would be like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to Hammerschmidt? Is he going to get that? What happens? He learned it. But because it's been hammered into me throughout this entire series, throughout this entire show from season one to now, that if you don't let it go, bad things tend to happen. So that's you know, it's hard to not think that. It's hard not to think that, well, I'm sorry, man, but you might just be out of here soon. this may be it for you. This may be as far as you go. And again, we talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, in all honesty, Frank's got two kills under his belt. Stamper, of course, is becoming a desperate man to get back into the good graces of Frank Underwood. He's also got a kill under his belt, too.
And you sort of touched on that before about Stamper and Leanne. I don't understand. I don't understand his fear of Leanne.
That's because Leanne is him, and he knows. And Leanne is slowly but surely becoming Stamper.
Mm-hmm.
She still has a conscience, and she still
hasn't
buried
a body yet that we know of.
Well, because she not yet. Because again, she still has a conscience. She still has heart. But as time goes on, and because at one point probably Stamper had conscience and Stamper has heart. I mean, we see him kind of drift back to it now. and it's catching up with him. That's why he's
nice
looking at the
kid.
Nice to
get a little backstory on Stanford.
But, you know, that being said, it's very possible for Leanne to go down that route that Stamper has kind of gone down, and it's very within the realm of believability. Because all that has to happen is that she has to do that one action one time. Like, in other words, she said the whole, like, you know, with the NRA, with the listening of the call, it's like, you know, I would recommend we don't do that. All she has to do is do that one time, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a lot easier to keep doing that stuff. It becomes a lot easier to do that. Again, if you see Stamper unhinged, you know, when he's like, you know, be obedient. It only takes one time to get there. And, you know, like I said, I'm very curious on what will happen to Hammerschmidt at the end of it all. You know, because again, I have a feeling he'll find out the truth, or at least some version of the truth or something. Something along the lines he'll figure out. He may not have the proof to say anything important about it, but he'll find out some portion of the truth.
I hope safety he doesn't, because every time somebody does
find out the truth, that's exactly the point. That, like, he will find it. He will find it. Yeah. He will learn it, because that is what he's been trained to do. That is what his passion to do things is. That's what he's determined to do. And when he's determined to do, when a character seems determined, especially a journalism character, mind you, a journalist in the series determined to do something, they do it.
Yep.
But for that character's safety, who knows? You know, because again, and I say it one last time, the reoccurring theme in House of Cards is if you don't let the past go, it will bite you. Mm-hmm. It will come back to haunt you. It will, in fact, may cause you gone. And again, you understand going into it, that's what, you know, the case. It's like, well, I learned the president did X, Y, or Z. That may be the end for you in this series. And we may not ever hear from you again, because it's happened so many times. It's not even like no one can take down the Underwoods. Like, eventually they'll be taken down. It's just the nature of things.
Yeah.
But it's like, do I think Hammerschmidt's going to be the one? I go, maybe, but doubtful. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we still got one more season to go.
Yeah, we do. We do.
And again, it's the writer, it's the series, because I go, like, I know how this has to end. We're not, if this was the last season, you know, and I'd start seeing the thing. It's kind of like the end of, like, Breaking Bad. Like, when you see that's the last season and you know that we only have two episodes left in the whole thing, it's like, all right, we know something's got to happen. And these, you know, we know there's going to be the showdown at the end, that kind of stuff. But because we got more to go.
I know. And the new showrunner, and what kind of, you know, that's why when we had Tom on last week, I asked him, you know, do you think that Conway could become the next Frank? And, you know, I completely agree with him that how can you have the show without Frank? You know, you can't have the show without Kevin Spacey. I tend to agree, but, you know, I don't know. Other shows have done Stranger Things and, you know, made it a spinoff. But God, I just don't.
Spinoff is one thing.
We're not podcasting
completely,
on that,
you know, season. you can have NCIS New Orleans.
Fear the Walking Dead version of this show.
You can have NCIS New Orleans. You can have NCI. You can have different. You can have CSI.
You can have CSI
Cyber if you want. You can even have, you know, other SVUs out there, and even tie in the other parts of those universes. And this is, again, I watch a lot of procedurals. You can do all of that, but unless you have to keep some semblance of something, and the hard part about this show, about House of Cards, is that we as the viewers do want an end. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that there's not a new series based within the House of Cards universe.
I agree. I think it's also kind of the nature of the binge watching nature of the show. We do. We want to sit down. We want to watch it. We want to end it.
Yeah.
We want to move on.
Want it done. And again, only based again, I don't know, because again, you've watched all those episodes, you know more than I do, but I watch, you know, episode per episode.
We're getting there. We're close.
I just do not see it. Do not see it work. As of right now, I don't see it work out for Hammerschmidt, but I don't know if that means that he plays it smart, finds out what he needs to find out, and then just realizes, if I do this, it's over. I could be stressed. I could be like, you know, like completely stressed out in my mind doing this, or I could just let it go, escape like I did before, and just accept that the world is the way it is, and just kind of tune out and zone out.
I'm envious of you because you watch it episode by episode as we do this, because you can make those predictions, and I kind of have to go,
yeah, sort of why I do.
But you know, one thing I will say is I collect the quotes of the show, and we never get a chance to say them, but I'm going to say one now. One thing that really stuck with me is when Tom was talking to the leadership, the Democratic leadership, he was trying to explain that that campaigns now are used to be theater, and they're show business. And I'm trying to scroll through to find the exact quote. It's show business, so let's put the best show on. And that irked me so much, because I'm so sick of the current U.S. Showbiz campaign that's going on right now between the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think most Americans are probably pretty sick of it. I hope they are. But it has become a big show, a big production, and more so than, you know, candidates really talking about issues and getting anywhere. So I really love that. That really struck with me. And so there's little bits and pieces about this show in general that I keeps me watching, keeps me, you know, it's kind of a nice escape from it all, but
for sure.
So Roberto, I think we should wrap this up here.
Yep.
Where can people find you?
Oh, I'm easy to find. You can hit me up on Twitter at Vincent404. And of course, you want to check out anything else I tend to do in the world, you can head over to our website, or my website, where I tend to do stuff, cosmicradio.tv.
Excellent.
What about you, Jackie? Where can people find you online these days?
Oh, they can just follow me at JackieHearn81 on Twitter. So, I guess we will be back at the same time, whatever time this is, in whatever part of the world you're in.
Whatever GMT offset you exist on. We tend to live in both the central and eastern time zones of the United States.
I'm getting better.
But, you know, calculate your GMT offset accordingly, whether it be GMT1, GMT0, or
just try to figure out what's going on in Jackie's head. And then, you know.
Anyways, people, take care.
Bye.